our TMDL implementation update.
Good morning, Chairman Hales and members of the board. Little change from the agenda. I'll be giving the presentation today on updating you on TMDL implementation. And for the record, I'm Brian McFadden, Regional Board staff. So slight delay, apparently. Okay. All right, there we go. So the topics I'm going to cover today include just a brief background on TMDL implementation generally. And then I'll discuss where we're at with the consent decree TMDLs, and then talk generally about implementing sediment in the region and temperature as well, with a little heads up of what we're going to bring to you in regards to temperature. So the background here is that the original intent of the TMDL program is that TMDLs are developed when traditional point source controls don't result in the achievement of water quality standards, and it's a process for which a planning and management programs designed to meet those water quality standards. And since 2005, we've been operating under the guidelines of the State Board's Impaired Waters Policy. So moving on to the status of the consent decree TMDLs, there's a table in your packet that provides details of each individual consent decree listing. It's important to note that we've got four water bodies that are on the original consent decree that have been delisted, and that with the adoption of the Klamath TMDL, we will have technical TMDLs in place for all of those consent decree TMDLs. The synopsis here is that with the sediment implementation policy, we have mechanism to address all sediment TMDLs. With our action plans, we have all the nutrient and DO TMDLs addressed with a plan. And also with those action plans, we have roughly half of the temperature TMDLs addressed. But we don't currently have a formal program to implement the remaining temperature TMDLs. More to come on this. But first, I wanted to just kind of go over those consent decree TMDLs on a map so that we can get the spatial context of where we're at with those TMDLs. The blue outline outlines the consent decree TMDLs, and since so many are listed, it's a little hard to pick them out. So I'll just point out that the areas that aren't listed in the original consent decree are the Smith River Basin, the Russian River Basin, and a smattering of coastal tributaries. But generally, most of the region was on the original consent decree. The polygons that are shaded, I recognize it doesn't come through on the projector very well, so I'll point them out. These polygons here, these are the water bodies that have action plans developed, the Klamath tributaries and the Klamath Basin, as well as the Garcia watershed. These all have action plans developed and in place, and we're going forward with implementing TMDLs there. Wow, that color really didn't work.
whatever you say it is.
it shows up much better in your handout and handout out on the table.
Nope.
No, it's not any better. It looks great on my computer screen. So. Hey, you'll just have to take my word for it.
Hey, Brian, can I interrupt you for just one moment and ask
sure.
a quick question? Is the difference between the implementation plan, these ones that having implementation plans, then is the difference between an EPA TMDL that was done by EPA, so therefore it doesn't have an implementation plan to it?
And not exactly.
Okay. Can you maybe
I'll
touch on that as you go?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Just so
okay.
I'm clear.
So, you know, as you're aware, we've got the action plans for the Klamath tributaries and the Garcia. We also have the sediment TMDL implementation policy, which functions as a TMDL action plan for sediment. And so what I was trying to portray here is that for the water bodies that have an action plan and for those that are only listed for sediment, the consent decree impairments are addressed. However, and so to address your question, a lot of those were developed by the EPA, but some of them also include temperature TMDLs. And so I don't have those highlighted here because we don't have all those impairments addressed. But some of those sediment TMDLs were also developed by staff here. Of course, they were established by the EPA. So in that regard, yeah, they are the EPA-established TMDLs. So what's left are the Eel, Mattole, and Navarro basins unaddressed for temperature. Of course, the Klamath basins have action plans, so those temperature TMDLs are addressed. I just want to talk about land use and our permitting mechanisms for one moment. The dark green area are the Forest Service lands in our region, now covered by the Forest Service waiver adopted last month, which fully implements sediment and temperature TMDLs there. The lighter green color is the timber production zones. It generally lines up with industrial timber lands. And we had the general WDRs for timber in place that address sediment in each plan. And then we also have the timber waiver, which applies to some of those industrial lands, but more importantly, private lands, small private, and the non-industrial timber management plans. I didn't have the information to present the extent of NTMPs in Siskiyou and Del Norte and Modoc counties because that information isn't available. But suffice it to say, there aren't many in those counties. So this is a pretty good picture of where we have non-point source permitting mechanisms in place to address sediment and in some cases temperature. What stands out is these areas that don't have color. A lot of the Siskiyou County area, some in Modoc, and then this broad swath roughly corresponding with the Russian and Eel River basins. And so I took a slide from Ben Zabinski's presentation from last month to illustrate what the land uses are, the major land uses are in those areas. And not a surprise, we have vineyards, irrigated agriculture, and then there's a lot of grazing that goes on, which is related to the extent of grasslands. And so we know what our tasks are for the future. And then finally, just wanted to put those consent decree watersheds on top of those land uses and just point out that the existing non-point source mechanisms that we have cover quite a lot of the area. So So changing the subject a bit to our sediment implementation program generally, of course, we have that sediment TMDL implementation policy that's in the basin plan, and it directs us to implement sediment TMDLs using our existing authorities. Primarily that relates to our permits. These are our sediment related permits, which I know you're all aware, so I won't read each one of them. We have existing permits and a number under development or planned. And then we have been involved with some planning efforts that certainly relate to sediment. So now I want to change the topic again to temperature, which is, of course, my favorite topic. Our existing implementation mechanisms for temperature include the action plans, of course, but also the non-point source permitting mechanisms that you're familiar with, and our grant program and the reviews of CEQA documents that we do. And then I think it's important to point out that controlling sediment is, in fact, implementing a portion of temperature TMDL implementation, because all of the temperature TMDLs identify the need to control sediment to address temperature. I mentioned that we don't have a formal program for temperature TMDLs region-wide. These are our existing mechanisms, but we don't have a comprehensive program. But we've been doing some thinking, and we'll be we'll be bringing to you a policy for you to consider that's based on some foundational concepts. The first being that in this region, loss of stream shade is the predominant cause of elevated stream temperatures. It's certainly not the only cause, but it's definitely the most predominant widespread issue that we're needing to deal with. Another major concept is that the actions that are required to address temperature impairments are the same actions that are required to prevent temperature impairments. And so that's significant because it really calls for a region-wide programmatic approach to dealing with temperature, and not just an approach that deals with the same factors watershed by watershed. Also, we recognize temperature is primarily a non-point source issue, and that Porter Cologne and the State Board guidance directs us to address non-point sources using waivers, permits, and prohibitions. And so, with that in mind, we've been working on sketching out a policy that we'll be bringing to you. It's a it's patterned after the sediment implementation policy. It's very analogous to that. It'd be region-wide in scope, and would rely on existing authorities. Similarly to the sediment policy, it would involve a resolution as well as a guidance document, and then finally a basin plan amendment to incorporate it into our basin plan. So that resolution that we would propose would identify the importance of shade in the protection of temperature, and the need to implement TMDLs, but also the need to protect temperatures in both impaired and unimpaired water bodies. And it would identify the existing regulatory mechanisms that we have to do that with. It would direct staff to use the existing tools that we have, the existing waivers and WDRs that are in place to implement temperature objective, as well as develop new mechanisms to address issues that aren't currently addressed, and direct staff to develop the guidance document and the basin plan amendment. The guidance document would look at each program that we have and major activity that we are involved with and explicitly address the kinds of temperature issues that may come up in that program and provide direction as far as appropriate ways to deal with those issues and identify the issues that staff and the public as well should consider when reviewing a project or developing a proposal for a project. It would also discuss the method to evaluate changes in temperature, sort of the toolkit that is available, and describe how temperature changes can also influence other water quality factors. And ultimately, this guidance document, the way that we would envision it, would help define for our own staff and the public what is and isn't a temperature concern. You know, in dealing with temperature, I've gotten a lot of questions and comments that that reveal that people have worries that that we're going to be worrying about trees on a ridge top providing shade miles away, and that a change of that nature might be something that we're considering. And so this guidance document would help narrow the discussion and focus staff and the public on the issues that we're really concerned about. These are the programs and activities that we'd be explicitly addressing. It's our standard suite of programs, but also we'd want to address flow issues explicitly, how we would deal with flow issues and work with our colleagues at the Division of Water Rights to affect changes when flow issues become an issue for temperature. And then also it would describe how we're going to address the assessment of temperature impairment and define that explicitly. And actually, we're already started on that, working with state board staff and helping them understand our approach currently so that when they're evaluating things, hopefully we'll have some consistency and it's going well, I would say. I think that they're very receptive to our approach. Finally, we'd incorporate the policy into the basin plan and incorporate the guidance by reference. That's similar to the sediment TMDL implementation policy. And then finally, I just want to leave you with what we're doing now to further this effort. We're going to be developing this temperature implementation policy that I just outlined, and we'll be bringing it to you for your consideration. And we're going to be continuing to implement sediment TMDLs consistent with the policy and our basin plan. And I realized I left off the third bullet, which is we're going to be continuing to implement our action plans to address TMDLs. And that's all I have, and would be happy to answer any questions you have.
Great. Thanks, Brian. Any questions? Yes, Mr. Noren.
So timing? What do you think time looks like on this?
I have a... We hope to have all this in place by 2013. As far as a resolution before the board for the temperature... we're talking about something much sooner than that. I think by the end of 2011, right?
We're not going to nail you down on that,
I'm
by the way.
Yeah, I see you.
No, I just think it's, I think with this, because I looked down this list of TMDLs under the consent decree, and it's sediment temperature. It's a paired, it seems to be always pretty much paired in here. We've pretty much at this point got to sediment in a variety of ways. And it, we're getting there on temperature, and I think it's so important to get there. I continue to, you know, kind of scratch my head. Not, I don't have the institutional history that others do here, but I look at, you know, some of our North Coast streams, like the, I always take the Gwala. Gwala to me is something that I would like to see us get back to. And some of the other ones, by the way, too. It's not just a Gwala, but other ones, too. And that this kind of program that you're describing just kind of conceptually here, I think it's just so important to get to that. Because I don't know how we get to them individually. It would take so long to get to them individually. And just in the short period of time that I've been here, we get things, we seem to be going more towards this type of programmatic approach. And I think it is right. I actually got to admit, I was watching you last meeting when we adopted the Forest Service waiver. And it actually sinks in again today about how important that was and how big that actually was. It was actually, you know, we should have actually been kind of cheering. It was pretty solemn, and I saw you kind of go, yeah, we did it. And it was a very understated adoption, but that was such a huge adoption because it took 50% of our land mass. It put a framework and system in place that basically blanket covered that. And this gets back to essentially much of the rest. And I think, again, it's very, very important. So hopefully I'll be here in 2011 and see this thing go. If I can help you, let me know.
Okay.
Thanks.
I'll thank you for that.
Okay. Yeah. Are we taking life insurance policies here?
Now that you mention it.
I have to agree with that, and I think, you know, in getting our concepts about temperature into the basin plan is going to be a real big step forward. You know, our general WDRs for timber, for instance, talk about that the plans have to be consistent with the basin plan. And where we have action plans in place, those action plans define what consistent with the basin plan in regards to temperature means. But we don't have that same definition region-wide to rely on, and so it becomes a discussion about every plan.
But at the same time, my own perception is, Brian, and I guess just a word of caution from here, is that when my perception has been when we start talking about, you know, site potential shade and some of that type of stuff, that's a head-scratcher for some people, right?
Yeah.
I think we've got a pretty steep curve there of, you know, trying to work this into, you know, all these various pieces and parts, and there's an education component that I think myself is going to have to go through, as well as the regulated community, the public, and because temperature isn't so necessarily something you could so easily get at. It's again, it's paired with sediment oftentimes, but it's not necessarily a natural pairing that you would think of. Oh, it's sediment paired. Well, temperature often goes with that for a variety of reasons, and it's, you know, it's a little bit harder to kind of conceptually get sometimes about why the how and the where.
Yeah.
And so I, again, encouraging just that going through this then, that there is a process to educate and to work through to get it done. So.
Well, I agree. And, you know, the guidance document is recognizing that,
yeah,
I think.
It's important. So, yeah. Great. Thanks.
I wanted to ask, one is, I didn't see a comparison to our triennial review priorities with where we are, and specifically, I think elk and freshwater are in the top tier, and so when are they scheduled to come to us, either one?
I don't know the answer.
You can throw it to the executive director. I told her I was going to ask this question.
Yeah. Elk and freshwater are, we're actually having a discussion about whether or not a TMDLs are going to be necessary to actually complete the technical work. We want to complete the technical work, but with this programmatic approach, we're wondering whether we need to do site-specific implementation plans for those two watersheds. And so that's sort of, I would call, a raging internal debate right now that will affect the end date.
Well, then let me throw just one more piece of fat in the fire on that. The legacy road issue, I think, has to be addressed there, and I'm not sure that's covered. Maybe it is, but I'd want to feel reassured on that.
And Mr. Corbett, we are talking with Humboldt Redwood about a comprehensive property-wide roads program.
Okay, and they could come to us in a ownership-wide permit as provided for in our waiver provisions. Okay, I think that would be an A-plus way to handle it. I want to give tremendous encouragement to staff to be taking the programmatic step. And I realize I'm probably talking 1 to 10 years because we're not getting the job done. And theoretically, for something to be declared impaired under 303 of the Federal Act, it means all the Federal Act provisions didn't work, all the state provisions didn't work, and it's still being impaired. And so that's sort of a serious, you know, indictment of the system that it looks like it's not working so well. And we've identified it in the non-point source, and we realize it takes a long time to make up for past errors. I do want to say, though, we are where we are. It's very progressive. But we're blowing it again under the promise of the Port of Cologne Act, which really wanted watershed-wide planning. And the real goal of the whole 303D in allocating loads was to say within this watershed, we got to bore down deeper and deeper and deeper and actually do watershed-wide planning that's coherent and good. And when the Port of Cologne Act passed, there's a huge push to get the basin plans. And that's sort of what we have, and we've been updating them. And our one of our best opportunities was the TMDL program. I think it's gone, and I think we're going to have to be practical and go to programmatic solutions. But I want everyone to say, I don't know whether I'll be alive 10 years down the line, but I will be coming back to this board. Now that you got that done, roll up your sleeves and start updating the basin plan by watershed as originally envisioned in 1969, and don't just rest on your laurels because we really blew it. Last time, we're tremendously advanced by comparison, and you always, wherever you are in life, you got to do the best you can, and I think your approach is really good, and I want to give very strong backing to it. But I do want to say we somehow have the hardest time doing watershed planning in detail that was originally envisioned in 69 and then envisioned in the TMDL process, and we're sort of walking away from that. We got to, and it'll be a huge net gain. And it probably will make that process real easy. For example, if you have good sediment and temperature guidelines, 10 years from now, you can go into the Mattole and say, this particular area has 160 inches of rainfall, one of the highest in the whole western part of the United States, and we probably need to make a higher BMP level for that. But at least we'll have the block done. And so it's very important work you're doing, but I don't want us to lose fact that there are site-specific problems that ultimately need to be addressed in a watershed-wide process.
Okay, thank you for that.
May I comment on that,
yeah,
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I agree with what you're saying, Mr. Corbett. It would be ideal to be able to do what we've done in the Garcia and essentially assign one person to a watershed. And as we all know, that's not realistic. But I'd offer something as a way of thinking about the world a little differently that we've been playing with, which is 303D was written with a point source viewpoint as a federal act, and it was said basically, you know, after you've taken care of everything you can do via technology-based approach for point sources, then everything that's left over do a TMDL. And I would say what's different in California, particularly once the state board adopted the non-point source policy that said, regional boards, you have to adopt permits for all non-point sources, is that perhaps TMDLs are best and most effectively done when we have also done the technology-based fixes for those non-point source issues, and then come back to the watersheds and get into then the site-specific things in those watersheds that aren't working, as you were suggesting.
I think I'm very close to that thought process.
Yeah, I think in hindsight, if we could go back and change things, we'd get the waivers in place and then go through, do our TMDLs and see what's left. You know, we kind of got ahead of ourselves in some regards, although, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that and politics.
But one of the best solutions we've come up with waivers, we couldn't do a generalized sediment, so we went up to individual waivers by sediment category, and that was politics. I mean, we couldn't move it at the board here for, I don't know, probably 10 years, and if I knew more, probably longer than that. So I think that's tremendous progress, and I think we're getting there. And the waivers are actually a huge positive regulatory tool right now. that I don't want to waste our time on describing their many benefits, but in the non-point source area, I think the accumulation of the waivers is going to be the accumulation of whether it's going to be the temperature or sediment policies, which ultimately will then get plugged back into the TMDL process. So I don't want to miscommunicate. We aren't making tons of progress.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. I do have a speaker card for this, at least one, but I think I may have more. And we will start with David Bannister.
That was actually for item 9.
Oh, for 9? I'm sorry. It says 7 on here. Great. Well, that went fast. Yeah. Item 9. Put that back in reserve. Ms. Edelman, followed by Daniel Myers.
Brenda Edelman, Russian River Watershed Protection Committee. I'm strongly aware that I'm in need of a lot of high learning curve on this issue. It is complicated, and basically all I wanted to say is I've been looking at the data just for our lower river area and was very confused in terms of the temperature because at many times, well, let me just say that the beaches, at least 3 or 4 of the beaches have been tested for temperature regularly. I've looked at it for the last year. And I'm seeing numbers in, at least half of the year from spring to fall in the 21 to 25 Celsius range at Guerneville and Hacienda, and I forget where else, but we're seeing extremely high temperatures. And what I was having trouble understanding is that these high temperatures started in June when the flows were pretty high, air temperature was pretty cool, and we have plenty of trees around. So obviously, I don't understand the relationship with sediment. I hope that I will learn these things as this process goes on. But it is very confusing to try and understand if you don't have a lot of heat in the air and in the water or where it just isn't intuitive to understand why the high temperatures are so high when it's basically cool out and there's high flows and there's plenty of riparian. So I don't know if anyone could give a brief answer, but it's something I'm very curious about. And I'm looking forward to learning more about this process. Thank you.
Mr. Myers.
Good morning. I'm Daniel Myers. I'm representing the Sierra Club. And we've been active in this particular fight since the consent decree back in 97. And we appreciate the work that has been done and what we've heard today. The program for the excess sediment, the work plan, it's a good program for dealing with sediment TMDLs. We supported it, but that program calls for an additional 20 people. In other words, it isn't self-regulating. The WDRs, you put those out, but there's a lot of aspects to that require staff. And you don't have them. You don't have the staff that you had 8 years ago when much of this came up. It's part of the business. I understand the problems. But I think the focus should be on increasing staff, going to the EPA, getting greater resources. You were trying to avoid the problem, I think, when we go to deal with temperature on the same manner. I don't think you can do it dealing with shade. I don't believe shade is the problem with our temperature and our streams. I think the absence of flow is the principal problem. Maybe 2121 highlights this. In other words, in the area of intense agriculture, we've dewatered our streams to the point that they now register as impaired for temperature. And that part has to be addressed. And we support AB 21, and we hope that it will get at some of the solutions to that. And we understand that you may have support from DWR on water rights issues. I think that's a more direct way to get improvement in your temperature TMDLs. The idea that you can get at temperature without doing it on a watershed basis, I don't think you can get there, and I would support the comments of Mr. Noren and Corbett to that extent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else? Board member comments?
Yeah, I just had one. I want to thank Mr. Myers. You've been a conscience on trying to get us to move. Well, I guess you sued us too, but and I won't go to a lawyer with a conscience, but I do want to thank you for bringing to our attention our duty under the law, and that albeit we have staffing, we have a lot of challenges, but we still got to find a way at the end of the day to meet the law to protect the beneficial uses in California. And I think I appreciate your pushes to us.
Thanks. I'm inclined right now to take a 10-minute break. We've got two more items before us coming.
Liar. No.
Well, hear me out. Okay. I'll say five and we'll make it 10. But my reasoning here is that we've got two more items. I'd like to talk to Mr. Krieger and Mr. St. John to get a sense of how long their presentations are, whether we wish to fold in lunch after one of these items or after the next item. So let's just take a quick break and we'll get a feel for that. And I see Ms. Coleman looking at me. No? Okay. We're on break. Mr. St. John, I'm looking in your direction. Okay. So we have a sense of our item 7 and item 8 presentation time, the timing of the presentations. What we're going to do is hear item 7 right now from Clayton, and then, item 8. I need to flip my page. We'll hear item 8, and then the board was going to break for lunch. We'll break for an hour.